we get it underway this afternoon by thinking spring, green grass, and baseball as we welcome back to the program. One of our favorite folks, he writes about baseball, fantasy baseball, in particular for The Athletic. He's also the host of the wonderful podcast, You and Me and an Album. Al Melchior joins us. Hello, Al.
Hello, Rich. So you're just getting the nor'easter, Hudson, snowing in Western Mass all day long.
Yikes. How much have you got your way?
This is the wettest snow. I think I'm not a meteorologist, but I think this is the wettest snow in recorded history. So it's just kind of flattening like a pancake, it feels like. But I'm guessing we probably have 4 or 5, maybe 6 inches.
Yikes. Well, I know this. When it comes this time of year, it doesn't last very long. We've got temps in the 40s the next week or so. So it'll be gone before we know it, and we can concentrate on spring and baseball and those good things in life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's all coming very, very soon.
Well, baseball season is indeed coming soon. I know that because the Red Sox lost again today. That 8-0 start in spring training was too good to be true. But let's start at the top, Al. Who's the is there this year a consensus number one guy in fantasy baseball?
I think maybe it's a little bit of a stretch to say that there's consensus. I've seen different players going first in different drafts. I think if there's anything that's maybe the closest to that, possibly Trey Turner. But depending on the format, too, actually was answering a question from a reader earlier today about head-to-head format. And, for me, Aaron Judge is the number one player in pretty much any format that I would want to take if I had the first pick. That's not necessarily everybody's opinion. But in head-to-head, Juan Soto's right there. But in Roto, he's not even in the conversation. So it's an interesting year where they're, depending on the format, there's different players that will be in play for you if you're lucky enough to be picking first or second or third.
I enjoyed your piece recently on your guys, some of the guys you're targeting in a number of leagues. I don't want to give it all away. People need to subscribe to The Athletic if they haven't already. What's wrong with them? But let's talk about a couple of them. Tell me why you like Christian Walker of Arizona.
Well, he's somebody this is kind of a hangover from 2022 because I do think that, people have definitely caught on that this is a guy that can hit for a lot of power, produce a lot of runs. But he got off to a poor start last year in terms of batting average. He just wasn't getting hits on balls in play. It was something that didn't look sustainable, which for him, was a fortunate thing. And he did start bringing the batting average up as the season went on last year. So if you look at the full body of work from 2022 for Christian Walker, this is somebody who's he's not going to help you in batting average, but he's not going to destroy you either. And I wrote something to the effect of, he's kind of got an outside chance of like a 40 home run season. So there's not many people that really fall in that category. And actually, I know I was writing about Kyle Schwarber as well and saying you can certainly count on him for 40 homers. But, Walker, I think you could easily expect 30, 35, and maybe if everything breaks right, 40 homers for him. And there's just not that many players you can say that about.
I really like it, Al, when you like guys that I like. It makes me feel better about my choices. And one of them is Reed Detmers. I'm very high on him.
Yeah, well, and again, we are in complete agreement, and since you've read my column, I am as well. And this one surprises me a little bit because, like I was saying with Christian Walker, it's not so much that he's like a big sleeper. People have caught on that he can be a really good power source at first base where those power hitters trail off, once you get to the middle of the draft. But Detmers is a legitimate sleeper because you look at the overall stats that he put up last year at the Angels, a 3.77 ERA, a 1.21 whip, just, really decent numbers. And he had a miserable start, got sent down, and there was a no-hitter in there, but overall not really an impressive start. But he came back with a different pitch mix, and it just seems like it just is more than just coincidence. He was throwing the slider a lot more, almost twice as often as he had been before he got sent back to AAA. And so the whiffs went up, the strikeouts went up, everything came down. He was very good also at limiting hard contact on airborne balls, which is, it's a little bit of a niche stat, but it's something I like to see. And obviously if you can keep the ball in the park, then that goes a long way And if you can miss bats on top of that, which Detmers did for the last half of the season, that, you know, you have to like what you saw there. There's no guarantee he will carry that over from 3 months into the 6 months of 2023. But given that, you can get him pretty late. You know, I'll be drafting him a lot and have been.
Another guy we both like. There are a couple of questions need to be answered. Will he stay healthy? That would be great. And where will he play with Dalton Varsho and Alejandro Kirk in the lineup? But tell me about Danny Jansen.
Yeah, that's you're right. There is a playing time question there. But part of what I like about Jansen, and I, you know, I wrote about Jansen really in the context of drafting a catcher. And at the time when you would have to give up a draft pick, or, you know, if you're in a bidding situation, you know, where you'd have to bid for one of the top guys, like Varsho, like J.T. Realmuto, Will Smith, I'm looking to fill other needs typically, and I just don't want to go all in on catcher because I just perceive that there's a little bit more variability at that position. So if you're looking at kind of the next, you know, tier, or really two tiers down, you're not going to find a lot of players that don't have playing time questions. And I think as long as Jansen stays healthy, now he did have a couple of stints on the IL in 2022, that limited his playing time. As long as he stays healthy, I think you're going to see probably more than a 50% split because Kirk can DH. They can move guys around, or you know, Jansen can DH. But I think, you know, he's going to be at least a 50% playing time player. Probably, I would expect, you know, 350-plus plate appearances from him. And that's enough for him to possibly give you 25 home runs. There is just undeniable raw power there for Jansen. And again, another player who's not going to be somebody you draft to help you with batting average, but makes pretty frequent contact. So he's probably not going to really hurt you in batting average. So if you're not willing to invest in the top-tier catcher, I think Jansen is falling late enough that you're really going to get a good return on what you have to give up to get them.
We're talking fantasy baseball. Al Melchior of The Athletic with us here on Downtown. All right, you made some bold predictions for the coming season, Al. One that Red Sox fans may smile about, as you predict that Xander Bogaerts in his new locale may bat below 250 this year.
Yeah, I actually think there's a pretty good chance. I mean, with bold predictions, you're always kind of pushing the envelope a little bit. But this is one I don't feel like is that far-fetched, because Bogaerts is, you know, many people listening know, hitters that play half of their games at Fenway, they get a lot of doubles. It's been the best doubles park for years, right up there with Coors Field. And it shows in Bogaerts' splits over his career with the Red Sox. On balls in play, he hit .357, and you know, a normal rate would be somewhere between .290 and .300. So he really got a benefit from playing home games in Fenway Park. And it's not just that he's losing that advantage. He's going to a park that's on the opposite end of the continuum for doubles and also for singles. So I won't necessarily expect Bogaerts to lose home run power. I wouldn't necessarily expect Bogaerts to lose much in terms of run production, because he's going to a fantastic lineup. But a big part of his appeal for me in past seasons is that it's been, this is a guy that you can count on to hit, you know, 290, 300 pretty regularly. And that's without that context of being in Fenway Park. I don't think that's going to be what you can expect from Bogaerts any longer going forward. And frankly, like I said, I think a very good chance that he doesn't even reach 250.
We've talked with you before, Al, about the evolution of the closer role, and we don't see too many teams now. The Red Sox, of course, have done it, but with getting Kenley Jansen, but often guys change roles over the course of the year. The manager will go with a hot hand, and there are a lot of those uncertain closer situations. One I think is especially interesting out in Chicago with the White Sox. Kendall Graveman would seem to be the guy who will step in until Hendricks is able to come back, but I wonder if somebody like Ronaldo Lopez might swoop in and take that job.
Yeah, and this is not the first time that I've heard that speculation. And I mean, it makes sense. I like Lopez a lot, especially in a bullpen role, given that you know, the White Sox haven't really committed to Graveman. I'll put it this way. I mean, I like Lopez's chances to get some saves. I would not be speculating on him in drafts unless it was a deep enough draft that you just really, you know, towards the end, you just really have to target pitchers that are going to have, you know, just a mere share of the saves. I would anticipate that Graveman will still get his share. Joe Kelly, perhaps. So this is one of these situations I'm kind of avoiding, Rich, because there's too many arms. You know, there's too many candidates in there who I could see closing out games.
All right. Well, I've got to ask you about one of my guys I picked up in a trade just a couple of weeks ago, Alex Lang. You think he ends up getting the lion's share in Detroit?
I'm not sure if the pun's intended there, but I absolutely do agree. Yeah, he's clearly the guy. You know, when you were looking last year, even before the Tigers traded Gregory Soto, you know, you knew that was going to be happening eventually, and you know, kind of looking up and down that bullpen and saying, you know, who's got the best skills, who profiles best as a closer, and Lang was that guy, and you know, that hasn't changed at all coming out of the off season. So this is somebody who struck out more than 30% of the batters he faced. That's, you know, unless you're talking about somebody like, you know, Clay Holmes, who relies on the ground ball. I mean, that's kind of what you need to see from your closer, but you know, Lang has done that. He also gets a lot of ground balls. That's a fantastic combination, right? You know, somebody who misses bats, but when he doesn't miss them, he gets little dribblers. So I don't see anybody else in that Tigers bullpen who has that kind of profile that's gonna make them more effective closer than Lang.
Who's a good comeback candidate for this year?
I had actually written a column about hitters who are profiling to hit for more power coming back.
I just saw that.
Yeah, and one of the hitters that I featured in there was Max Muncy, and he really stands out for me because this is a hitter who I did eventually lose patience with him last year because we got into the second half and there was still nothing happening there. The batting average was under 200, but you go to his, you know, his Fangraphs page or his Baseball Reference page or, you know, whatever site you prefer. And you'd see, you know, there's raw power there, that the skill set hadn't really changed. It's just the stats nosedive. And then eventually the last 2 months, you saw the stats catch up with the indicators. So, you know, I'm not sure why that happens. I mean, it's just, you know, that's just the randoms of baseball sometimes. But I think that was really encouraging that for the last 2 months that, you know, we saw the Max Muncy that, you know, we've recognized from the past. So I would expect that we'll see him back in 2023 hitting for power, hitting for a decent enough average. And, you know, in a lineup that's not quite as good as it's been in the past, but, you know, still good enough to afford him some RBI and run scoring opportunities.
And who's somebody that's overvalued in drafts so far? Maybe the peripherals don't support what they put up for numbers last year, or you just think are someone who's ready to decline a little bit in production?
That's a tough one. Because, you know, certainly I'm thinking, you know, top of mind, you know, Xander Bogaerts, because there's the change of scenery. But I'm a little bit surprised at how early Bo Bichette is going, and I sort of hesitate to, you know, to say that too loudly, because I, you know, it's just, this is somebody who's, you know, typically going first round or maybe early second round, and I wouldn't want to discount him too much, but he's certainly going to be helpful for steals. I do wonder how much that contribution is going to be discounted with the pitch clock and the new runner engagement rules. That's going to make it easier for hitters to steal bases. And he's somebody that I'm kind of fading away from a little bit. I mean, last year he did just steal 13 bases in 21 attempts. I'm a little bit skeptical of the power production from the last couple of years. So, you know, again, I wouldn't fault anybody for getting him, you know, if he fell to like late in the second round, but given that he's kind of in that, you know, top 12, top 15, that does strike me as a little bit early.
And finally, before we let you go, Al, who's near the top of your prospect list?
You know, the prospect in Cincinnati, who's been, you know, opening eyes with all the home runs, Christian Castellanos-Strand. You know, I've seen people, you know, comment that maybe he breaks spring with the on the roster. I'm not so sure about that, but I think he's a good pitcher to, you know, certainly to kind of stash away, or I'm sorry, a good hitter just to, you know, stash away, even if he has to come up a few weeks later. Luis Ortiz on the Pirates, there's, again, maybe not an opening day rotation spot for him, but I don't think it'll be long before he comes up, and he'll be somebody who can get a lot of strikeouts. Obviously, may struggle to get run support, but a pretty good skill profile there. I was really excited about Andrew Painter until he got hurt, so I'm probably not going to put him quite in the same conversation. And one prospect that I'm drafting a lot is Matt Mervis, and it's kind of the same thing. I wouldn't expect Mervis to be the opening day first baseman or DH for the Cubs, but I don't think it'll be long before he comes up. And a lot of power there. That's a lineup that, you know, even with losing Wilson Contreras, they just plugged Dansby Swanson right in. I think that's a lineup that maybe is a little better or certainly not worse than it was a year ago. And with Mervis being in it, it gets a little bit better. So he's somebody that, one thing, you know, the one I'm most excited about, but for whatever reason, I keep drafting him.
Al, it is always great talking baseball with you. Al Melchior from The Athletic. And if you haven't already, also subscribe to his terrific podcast, You and Me, and an album. Al, thanks so much for making time with us, and hope all your teams have great seasons.
Well, thank you, Rich, and likewise, same to you.
All right, we'll talk with you again soon. Bye-bye now. Bye. Al Melchior with us on Downtown.